That's Navy veteran Ann Gibbon, Naval Academy graduate, national amateur boxing champion, and founder of Maitre Decision Management. Coming up next on Veteran on the Move.
Welcome to Veteran on the Move. If you're a veteran in transition, an entrepreneur wannabe, or someone still stuck in that J-O-B trying to escape, this podcast is dedicated to your success. And now, your host, Joe Crane.
Navy Federal offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high-interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. All right, today we're talking with Navy veteran Ann Gibbon, founder of Maitre Decision Management. You're doing some real fascinating things with decision management, and there's some AI tech startup mixed in there. So looking forward to hearing that, Ann. But before we get to talking about all that, you did some interesting things in the Navy. So tell us all about that.
I got really lucky. I started out at the Naval Academy, and it sounds, I don't know, I felt like it sounded fancy once I got to my ship, and you know, there's only a few officers. And I remember I wanted to learn how to lead. My dad was a gas station owner. My grandfather was enlisted in the Navy in World War II. He survived Pearl Harbor. So I grew up with these stories of service. My dad spent 30 years volunteering as a cop. And I saw my dad's examples of leading in this gas station and how he took care of his people. It wasn't just employees to him. So I thought I'd learn leadership from the Naval Academy. And I really loved my time there. But when I got to the fleet, I was like, oh, that was not how the real world works. And so I got really lucky that I had phenomenal sailors on my ship, from junior enlisted to senior enlisted, that like taught me how things worked. And some of the stuff that made that work for me is I was the first woman to box at the Naval Academy. There just hadn't been women on the team. And this is back in like 2002, 2003. And so in my first fight, it was an amateur fight out in Baltimore in a union hall. And I won it by knockout in the first round. And that was way more helpful for being an officer than a lot of other things I learned. God
bless. Right? Instant credibility.
Well, yeah, especially when I'm like, I'm 5'11". I won, and eventually won the heavyweight national championship. But because of that, I had a heavy bag hung in the helo hanger of my frigate. And there was only three women at one point on our ship, six at another point. So once I started practicing on the heavy bag, it changed from being like a 22-year-old female junior officer from the Naval Academy to a fighter. And so that changed the game. But I got to do a lot of interesting stuff. So I was there for 3.5 years. I was an aide at the Naval Academy. I was able to box and go on no-cost TAD and do a bunch of tournaments over those early years. I taught leadership at the Naval Academy, have a lot of feelings about that, and then finished my career at Naval Special Warfare Development Group and did some strategy work there.
Awesome. Yeah. Great time in the Navy. What was your transition like? Was it a surprise you were getting out, or were you were you well planned and ready to go when you transitioned out?
I knew that I was going to get out. So I had, you know, 6 or more months to plan. But no, I was clueless about what I wanted to do with my life. Like the whole time, right? I think it's such a painful thing to think about, like what career you want to do, and you have no clue what anything's like. I mean, I remember spending hours when I was on my ship in port, like I'd sit there at night and Google all these careers and like, what is it like to do this job and that job? And there's no way you kind of actually understand what that's like from, you know, internet searches, but it's all you've got. And, I felt like lost as to the next steps kind of the whole way through the Navy. But I knew that I didn't like making the trains run on time. Like, I need to be doing like innovation, new things, creating something. And so I knew that the Navy wasn't going to work for me as a career, but I didn't know what else to do. So I got, I feel like pretty lucky. I met some people like 6 months out of the transition that introduced me, or like, oh, you mentioned that you like this thing, like you should talk to these people. And that ended up turning into a fellowship offer to go leave the Navy, but I felt really lost for a long time. So I think that's, if anybody feels like that too, it's super normal. I love talking to people getting out, because there is so much opportunity out there and you just can't even conceive of it before you leave the military.
Yeah. I think that's a lot terrifying. Of veterans shortchange themselves on expectations, you know, like even like, I know even people that were, I had some fellow officers that were retiring around me and they're like, I just want a job where with my retirement pay, the job pays me what I'm up to what I'm making now.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
really that's your goal. Okay.
Well, yeah.
But,
it feels safe. And when you're used to getting a paycheck every 2 weeks, I'm never going to forget this one. When one of my executive officers said, if you don't like kill somebody or sleep with the help as an officer, like you're going to get paid every 2 weeks. and so like, we expect a lot out of you, but also the bar is pretty low to keep getting paid. And that, changes once you get out, but also there's just so many corporate layoffs that sometimes you can't do anything about.
Sure.
And you just need to know how valuable you are, getting out of the military. Everybody, you learned so much about how to be resilient and just get things done. And that is, a pretty like super valuable skill, even though it's hard to explain, you know, like it's not a particular degree or skill, but you can pick those things up super fast, but it's the ability to get things done that is so incredibly valuable to any employer.
Absolutely. And in the military, you're dealing with that almost every day. How are we getting things done? And sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it's how to get everybody to the chow hall. I mean, but it's still getting something done, you know?
Yeah. It's still a rep. You got it in.
It's still a leadership exercise. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so ultimately, where's the first couple of places you landed? And, you know, eventually I wanted to figure out where this entrepreneurship thing came from with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it came because I do not like following orders, and God bless them. Any of my bosses that if they ever watch this from the Navy, they'd be like, yep, that sounds like her. She's not being faked by AI right now. It became because my dad, I'm the oldest kid. There are three of us, and my dad owned this gas station, and he had since he was in his early 20s in a towing company. And as the girl, my bedroom was the one next to my parents. And I remember my dad getting the calls in the middle of the night. So when a tow truck got in an accident in the snow and hit somebody, or there was a shooting at the gas station, or whatever it was, whenever there was a problem, as the CEO of that company, it was small, but there's no backstop. There's absolutely nobody else that you can go to. You're like, oh, this is fucking hard, or this is overwhelming. Like, I'm going to pass it on. And that, I know that subconsciously, that experience of listening to my dad, of having that yoke of responsibility on you, like there's a lot of good that comes from the freedom of being in charge. It's awesome to have that kind of control and freedom. But the weight of the responsibility of, there's nobody else to call, no matter the size of your business, like when you're the last one in charge. I found that eventually I craved that. It was 2017. I'd done some super interesting stuff. I did this design thinking fellowship for a year, and it was so fun and creative, you know, very different from a lot of the things in the military. I got to do consulting and travel, and I got to live in New Zealand for a few years working with Maori tribes doing that work. It was life-changing, but I didn't know where my career was going. And so again, I was doing that at 37. What am I doing with my life? And I, instead of knowing the job at that point, 4 years out of the military, I knew I'd seen enough people in different jobs and companies to first listen to the experience I wanted to have day to day. And so it was things like, I really want to lean into like academic research and innovation from the perspective of how do I take this into the world so people can use it. I wanted to turn something that was an idea into a product. And I realized I wanted the responsibility and the opportunity of being in charge. I'd spent a little bit of time in Silicon Valley, a couple of years, and I had that atmosphere. I'd never lived around that before, where you weren't valued because you were on some linear path at some point. Like your age correlated with some like position on a path. you were kind of valued socially because of the ideas you have and the swing that you were taking. And so that gave me a lot of just the ability to imagine a different path. So then I was like, wow, I might be 37, 38, but I want to take a swing at a startup because I want the opportunity, the chance to get that upside opportunity, the value. But I decided that I could handle that risk because I also wanted to be the last call.
Members of Navy Federal Credit Union could earn more and save more. By opening a certificate, you could earn more than a standard savings account. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal. Start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit. For example, you could open an Easy Start certificate for just $50. Add money at any time and watch your savings grow. Navy Federal offers equity loan options to help you get the funds you need to consolidate high interest debt, work on home improvements, or cover any of life's big expenses. Fixed rate equity loans offer no closing costs, saving you money. To learn more about Navy Federal's home equity loans, visit NavyFederal.org. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loans subject to approval. With a busy schedule, it's always important to prioritize your to-do list. But the little things can keep you from conquering your tasks. That's where Squared Away comes in. The remote executive assistants tackle the tasks you don't have time for, so you can focus on what really matters. And what I really love about this company is their dedication to supporting military families. Squared Away was founded by a military spouse who realized that she was part of an amazing talent pool, and when changing bases made it hard to hold down a job, their skills were underutilized. At Squared Away, highly educated military spouses become your trusted remote executive assistants. They operate in all U.S. time zones for a fraction of the cost of a full-time employee. Squared Away has already supported so many business owners with just about every kind of task or project, from event planning, grant writing, bookkeeping, proofreading, or updating the company website and social media, to personal tasks like booking a plane flight for a dog, researching puppeteers, or planning a virtual baby shower. I actually have two military spouses that help me produce this podcast. Contact Squared Away today to see how they can support your business. Just go to gosquaredaway.com/contact. That's gosquaredaway.com/contact.
So I got started with Matri because I had met this mentor friend of mine back when I was still active duty. I was doing counterterrorism strategy at the SEAL team, and he showed me some demo software. So he had spent a lot of time going back and forth to Afghanistan as a civilian, building girls' schools and health clinics. And he just was one, he'd been in the Army for a couple of years when he was 18, but he was going back in his 40s and 50s. And he was just one of those people that like couldn't stand on the sidelines when something hard and terrible was happening. And so he figured out how to get to Jalalabad because San Diego's Rotary Club was sister cities with Jalalabad. Like of all the insane ways to get to Afghanistan, it was Rotary Club. Yeah. He's an incredible man, especially it's almost March, Women's Month. He put together, found the funds and hosted a bunch of International Women's Days and brought these young girls around like of anywhere in the world that matters, and to remember now that the Taliban is in charge. It was his work over there. And like, that comes back to my company because he's always been committed to doing good in the world. He has an MD and a PhD in neuroscience, which is incredible. He was enlisted in the Army for a couple of years. His story is incredible. When he left, he just was hungry for knowledge. And so he worked from like junior college courses up to a double degree, an MD and a PhD. And when he was doing the MD, the clinical rounds, you're going through different units. And so one of them was these surgical units. And so these long surgeries, and there's a couple of time that patients died and the attending physicians were kind of counseling all the young medical doctors involved. And because it's an emotional event to lose one of your first patients. And they're like, this just kind of happens. Like as a doctor who's learning, you're going to lose a few patients before you get the years of skills to notice those little things and do it right and be able to save those edge cases. And he was so frustrated because he's like, I can't accept that. He was also doing these neuroscience courses. And he's like, we were being asked questions about their data and having to go as the med students, we were the ones who were going to flip through their charts, like stacks of charts to look for like patterns or like some notation. He's like, it's insane to me that we have the data. Our nervous system is capable of consuming a lot of information. I know that because I'm doing these courses. Why don't we have the interface? And so I talk about starting my company because I would imagine with most, but for sure for me, I'm the CEO and I love building a company, but I don't do this on my own now. And I certainly didn't, I'm not the magician that came up with the idea out of thin air. Like I like noting my genealogy, like these are the things that built it. And he's an amazing mentor and friend who co-founded the company with me. So he came up with a bunch of ideas about how to move information, more information, more efficiently through our nervous system. So like, what are all these channels we have of like haptics and audio and obviously visual? And if I understand that physiology, the neuroscience in detail, can I then design interface as like, whether it's visual or muscle sensors and stuff, to communicate more? And then he realized the power of using information well to get to better decisions is not this one-way ingesting, it's dynamic. So he developed devices and ways of interacting with machines to communicate back. And so they were like hacking game controllers and doing all kinds of stuff. So our company is founded on this idea that we can save lives, we can improve our world if we have much more advanced ways of taking advantage of our nervous system to move information in and out. And then my experience with that, like motivation of we need to build something better than we have now, was at in the military, and especially at that SEAL team. You had brilliant people, amazing data, like some of the best data sets in the world that you're going to get for that work there. And there were times when we were struggling to put it together because it's so complex, right? All of the stuff that happens in those environments. And we were trying to remember it in our heads and like look through maps and reports and stuff. But if we could have had that tool, that would have changed things. So I'd met him when I was there because of the Afghanistan thing. Somebody introduced us. He was there, you know, I was in the military, but I saw his demo software and then it just stuck with me. I was obsessed. And so then when I was like 38, we'd kept in touch and he asked me if I wanted to build a company together. So Maitri started because I, you know, want to be in charge of my day. I don't like taking orders. And I have this obsession with building something. This has to be in the world because I know the value it's going to bring and the problems it's going to solve. So If you're obsessed, then building a company is for you. Yeah. But if you prefer not to live obsessed, probably find a job.
that's a great way of putting it.
It is. That's the line, man. Entrepreneurship. People ask me sometimes, you know, it's hard, or I have friends who are like, well, oh man, this is the best. So I did a friends and family round and I wrote like 350 emails to people like classmates and friends. Some of them I hadn't talked to in 20 years. And I was like, hey, this might be awkward. You know, it's weird asking you for money, but I know what I'm building. I've been doing this for a few years now. And so I'm about to, you know, build the company and get bigger deals. And I'm going to go raise venture capital money, but I want to extend this to people that I really care about. And like, you did this thing for me 20 years ago. Like we had this friendship, or so you can say no, but I would be like, look, someday I'm going to take this company public. I'm going to be rolling around in my jet and we're going to have done really well and done good things in the world. And I want to at least have given you the opportunity to say no. So if you say no, like I'm happy with the no. I just want you to remember that someday when you see this going well, that I cared enough to be awkward and give you the chance to say no.
That's funny. You mentioned friends and family around. I had a professor at Oklahoma State in one of my entrepreneurship classes. He always called it the FFF. Friends, family, and fools.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. I swear to God, there's nothing that sits on me more than the responsibility of taking care of my people. Like, And that's both my friends and family investors and, you know, my employees, and also then our clients, like they're giving us money to get some service back. But that's the interesting thing about entrepreneurship. There's, I think by percentage, more vets that go in to be entrepreneurs than general population. And I think when you find something, you have to be super savvy. You have to do your work to understand business models and how things sell and how companies grow and where they get stuck. There's a lot to learn, a whole lot to learn, but there's nothing like the edge of adrenaline of working to create something in the world that wasn't there before when you deeply believe that it's valuable and necessary.
I got some stats here. Veterans own 2 million small businesses. Veterans have 5.2 million employees, 1.27 trillion in sales, and 232 billion in payroll. That's veteran entrepreneurs. So, okay, random thought going back.
Yeah.
The title of a book you should write in the future should be, I learned about leadership from a gas station owner, or everything I ever knew about leadership, I learned it from a gas station owner, or something like that. Anyways.
Yeah. Because if I was very, it's, you know, a tiny business comparatively. Right. But it afforded us a very good life. I'm very, very lucky. So I was always conscious as a kid, you know, cause my, those employees, when you work at a gas station, it's minimum wage. And I just knew, I could tell by the way they looked at me when we were around. Cause you know, we were around as kids, right? Like 7 years old, we're hanging out in the summer while our mom's doing the bookkeeping. And I was like, we're reading books. You see as a kid how people treat you. And I could tell that they were careful around us because our dad paid their paycheck. And so once I got old enough in high school and I had shifts there, I was extremely conscious to never use that position to get away with anything. And so like I cleaned the bathrooms, those cans of Vienna sausages at convenience stores. Like,
yeah.
I dusted them, the same can, right? Like every week, and stocked the shelves, like all of the stuff, like pick up cigarette butts out in the, near the pumps, and like all the shitty jobs. Like I did it all alongside them because I was just, so that started at a young age, like what power meant of, so then that, you know, I carried over to being an officer and I'm like,
yeah, you could turn that whole thing into a really cool, cool book if you thought about it. But
anyway, I could get emotional because I'm going to say this, interrupt you real quick, but the hardest thing to do in the world is remember when you have a little bit of power that says the only thing that like the judge about you doesn't make you a phenomenal person, right? Like we get so enamored. We confuse power with something that it says about ourselves. And we miss that it is this incredible responsibility to take care of the people that we have power over and to lift them up. And there was nothing that made me more angry than to see, whether it was senior enlisted or other officers, treat that well. And so it's something that I think about myself every day. Like, am I doing the best I can with the positions of power? And to me, like of all the things that entrepreneurship is, that's the core of it, is you've chosen a position of power, and are you handling that well that day?
Yeah. I talked about this a while back on a different episode, but that's the thing the Marine Corps taught me was,
yeah,
how do I establish, I always felt like I got to establish credibility with the people that I'm in charge of.
Yeah.
And
nothing else matters.
Sometimes you see leaders that's totally lost on, since they have the position and the power, they don't need to worry about credibility because they already got the power. But every time and on a daily basis, it was, how do I establish, how do I maintain leadership credibility with these people?
Yeah.
And I saw great examples of it. I saw bad examples of it throughout my,
yeah.
You really learn more from the bad examples. You know, we've all seen it. And just 24 years worth for me. And I'm just like, and to this day, that spills over into, you know, the guy who comes and cleans our pool and checks the chemicals once a week. I establish credibility with him, and you can tell they appreciate it, because a lot of owners are like, you work for me and you're here for me to shit all over you. Nope.
No.
A waitress in a restaurant, you know, the bartender, everywhere you go.
Yeah.
That's infused in me now. And I didn't, growing up, I didn't get that. I didn't, yeah. It wasn't that way.
No. One of the things that I love about being an entrepreneur is you're creating jobs. So you get to choose who you reach out to and hire. And one of the guys that works for me is a former enlisted Marine. He did his enlistment, left, used his GI Bill, got a college degree. And I think it was taking a while. It was in computer science. So he's a little bit older, right? Starting than a normal full stack developer. And he wasn't, he's having a hard time finding a job. This was a few years ago. And so, I found him on some like veteran Slack coding thing and was interviewing him. And he came on and I just treated him well. And like, there's chaos and uncertainty in a startup and you've got contracts that like turn over or not. And then you like, it is not stable in a startup. So there's a lot that he, you know, put up with. And he'd always been his dream to work for a gaming company. So he had been applying to those and he finally got in and told me that he was leaving. I was like, that's, you know, fine. I want you to go pursue your dream. But he was the kind of person because like in the company, we established like mutual care for like everybody. It wasn't just me or him. It was everybody on the team, but he felt that for me. So even when he left, I was not paying him. He still stayed on our team Slack channel and he knew some things about our code. So he was like, hey, if you ever have any questions, let me know. So every once in a while, I'd be like, oh my God, like, so I'm working on this thing. It's a Saturday. Please do not respond today. Like if you have time, could you answer this question? If not, that's fine. No, like no pressure. And this dude on a Saturday at 6 PM, not working for me, not getting paid, would see. And like 20 minutes later, he was on a Zoom call with me and helped me figure this thing out. And I'd been struggling with it for a few hours.
Yeah. And that's called obsessed, right?
Yeah. For me. And like for him, it's called like the relationship, like nobody's using each other. We're like,
yeah,
it's, you know, there's paychecks and there's those kind of accountability things. So he eventually came back, and now works for me again. Because he was like, that gaming company, those managers were they were jerks. I don't want to work there. And then they ended up after he left, they ended up doing a big layoff. So a lot of his friends, are just out in the street now looking for jobs, but he's back. And one of the things he said early on, in the like first few days back, he's like, what's your policy? Like, you know, is a 30-minute lunch included in the 8 hours or like, is it not? And I was like, nope, you're not a robot. Like, that's what we like. I'm like, we're going to have to retrain you from the gaming company to like this. You're a human. Sometimes your lunch is going to be 20 minutes and sometimes it's going to be 2 hours. I'm asking you to do very challenging mental work. And there are changes to that and I can't drive it. I can only trust you. Like we can talk about the work that needs to be done, but if I can't trust you to put in time during the day and manage yourself, then like this is never going to be effective anyway. So,
right. So
I love hiring.
Yeah. So I wanted to, you've given us a very big blue arrow wave top idea of what Matri does.
I didn't talk about the business yet.
Like what,
I should do
what
that.
Are some of the, What exactly
do you guys do? Your day?
What's your product good. Do? Who are you serving?
Oh, sorry. I've been thinking about leadership a lot. So eventually going into every market, but what we do is build a paradigm shifting way to look at data. So we've devised a different set of graphics for 3D. So if you think... the way that we think about information is usually spatial. One of the examples I like to give, it's not data graphics, but it's these memory games. If you see people who win memory tournaments, they do that when they're being told numbers. And the way that they remember all those numbers that are they're different from each other, no connection between them. But they imagine themselves in a place like a house. And so each number they hear is like, okay, a step and then another step up and there's a railing and there's a scene. I say that because our mind is such an incredible spatial processor and we don't take advantage of it now in our data visualization software. So we're doing that. So we're building these 3D scenes with objects that represent real numbers. So if somebody's baseball stats, like home runs go up, the color is going to get brighter or the shape is going to get bigger. But our brains process information that we see in the world. We process color and shape and motion. much faster than we process what's the meaning of text. And so we're able to create really complex scenes that are useful for like military intelligence analysis, medical research, supply chain management, because we can take these graphic scenes and just layer a lot of information on in these shapes. And it makes sense. You're like, oh, I'm like, I know I got obsessed the moment I saw it because I was doing counterterrorism stuff. I know that I want to see in a scene. I know how I think about it. I want to see the training camps and every year, how many people there were. I want to see where different attacks were and like information about it. How big was it? Did we catch the person responsible? I want to, as much as I think about information about some problem I'm working on, I want to be able to pull that data and represent it in the scene so I can manipulate it and go, oh, there's a pattern here. Like when these events are happening, there's also this other thing happening. And so it's creates an effect of interacting with data similar to what you see in Iron Man in Tony Stark's lab. So we're finally getting to the place where that like futuristic Jarvis, he's in his lab and he's looking at these panels of 3D and he's talking to his AI going, I want to see more of this. Like, show me this data. Okay, take that away. More of this. That dynamic interaction is what we're building. So people can go through data sets, do analysis much faster. And you don't have to be a data scientist. You just need to be, you know, pursuing an expertise in your area of work. So scouts or medical researchers or intel analysis can all do.
Yeah. So like a visual representation of data in some ways.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like turning the best of gaming, like flying through a scene and like shooting things down, bringing that kind of fun interaction, navigating a world to data visualization and data analytics.
And who do you view as your customers?
Things like cyber analytics, intelligence analysis, medical research. We had a contract with a pro sports team. So people who are working through decisions or developing people. So an example, like a baseball scout saw our software and was talking about this example. He's like, oh, I know how I'd use this. There's a pick that I want to make in the draft. It's the fourth or fifth round. There's a pitcher, but it's a type of profile as pitcher. And he's really good at his job. He's thought through it in detail. He's like, it's 35 parameters. There's, you know, of 10 different types of pitches, there's these two that I'm really interested in. So I want to break down the data in like 35 parameters. And so he's like, I can use your software to create a visual of that, like rods or rings or something for every one of those parameters and like broken out by subgroups. And go, okay, that's what I'm looking for. And then go, all right, show me all of the pitchers in North America that fit that. And now I'm going to like raise up the ones that are more interesting to me. Like if you're in D1, if you're above this height, if you, you know, have these numbers against left-handed and right-handed pitchers, whatever. And then he's like, I can target who I'm going to see as a scout based on that. And then I can track their per game data over time to be more precise. So we're targeting people who have perspective on their world that's going to be valuable for the decisions their company's making, but they can't turn that idea into valuable decisions because their idea isn't connected to data. So we're able to connect what people are thinking and then express it in this graphic form so they can see it, all of the detail, and then interact with the data that like populates that vision, that idea.
So your baseball example, because baseball is full of statistics, player stats, you know, I mean, it's probably one of the most stat ridden sports that there is, you know. What wasn't it, the movie called Moneyball? Moneyball.
Yeah.
Great example. And the main line I remember was, why do I want this guy? Because he gets on base. Like, it doesn't matter if he bunts or gets a single or walks or gets hit, he gets on base. I'm like, I always wondered, there were a lot of scouts, it kind of pointed out in the movie, a lot of scouts picked people off of how they looked and, oh, he's a good guy.
He's tall. He has a hot girlfriend.
It was all this crazy, like, which guy you want you to join your fraternity type mentality instead of, well, what are the stats, you know? And so it's funny how all that creeps into even something like baseball.
it's an interesting world. I think we're, obviously, we see, ChatGPT and AI all over the place. I think what our company is doing is working on a paradigm shift in data analytics, where we think now that we're going to get this value from AI, and it's incredibly powerful math, but we don't have tools to connect our brains to the machines. So like our brains right now, you only, when you see a data visualization, it's four parameters in the little charts and lines, and like maybe it's 8 to 10 in some of the 3D visualizations with single spheres.
Yeah.
But this revolution, there's a huge amount in our culture because of Moneyball and the idea that we can get value in our company if we use stats and numbers. And so it kind of made those scouts look stupid. And in many ways, they weren't contributing a lot with these like feelings, right? Of like, he has a hot girlfriend, so he's confident. So like, we should pick him. But what we're bringing around is this full circle moment where actually people who are experts in their field, they may not do data analysis, but when they're living it, observing it. And so that could be scouts. It could be SEALs working on now, like who are retired. We're talking to a few who are involved in different industries where they're taking their expertise in conflict and mapping it to risk models and different like supply chain analysis to find risks. That there is a ton of value to be gathered when you take subject matter expertise and pair it with data. And companies haven't exploited that. Yeah. And that's only going to be more necessary to marry our minds with machines now that we have AI this powerful.
Yeah, I've totally forgotten about this, but you know, just a few years before I retired from the Marine Corps, I spent most of my time in squadrons, but squadrons, battalions, whatever unit you were in, ship.
Yeah.
I wanted to call it the commander's dashboard, where every morning he comes in, he brings up the computer. She is looking at the stats and what really matters, because you would always identify, oh, that's a good squadron. Oh, that's a good battalion. Why?
Yeah.
Why do you say that? Like, well, everybody likes it. Well, okay. But there's gotta be more to it than that. What, like, ask each CO what their rate of promotion is among their junior enlisted. They have no clue. They don't know what their rate of promotion is. You don't really? Yeah. What was your average rifle score? Because among junior Marines, your rifle score, your PFT score, and then your pro-con ratings are the three main things that either you make the cut to get promoted or not. Well, why do all your Marines have such bad rifle scores? Oh, we don't emphasize. Yeah. We don't help them out. We don't snap in for 2 weeks before. Well, you could be helping. I was just like, none of that stuff gets tracked. None of that stuff gets paid attention to. Like, it's we need to help them do good, but it never gets tracked. It's not analyzed.
It's not specific. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, I actually tried to like, I kind of storyboarded it and had it drawn out myself.
Yeah.
I had no capability whatsoever to ever pull that data or present it in any type of functional way.
Thank God our like data architecture is getting better, both in the military and out. So you can do that kind of stuff. But you see, like, you had a connection to, I know what I want to manage. Like, you had a way of thinking about that information and a way to break it down. You just needed tools to help you do that. So you could, that's like both leadership and the management practice, like the way that you wanted to act in the world, you could have made better decisions if you had better access to data. Way to think about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Another problem I noticed was like the S1, the G1 administration was frustrating for most people, the customer end. And I'm like, why are unit diary failure entries never tracked? Like, you're not evaluated on how many entries you put in to program the system that get kicked back because you didn't check something ahead of time. I'm like, I know why, because it's not on the inspection checklist. The inspection checklist focuses on all these other things that don't really take into account the frustration of the customer, which is your typical Marine. And I'm like, why don't we change the inspection checklist, which was a whole other monumental thing. But anyways, I'm digressing here. We're pretty much out of time. So actually we've gone over time. So, and I do want to give you a chance. So how do we find out more about Matri?
Our website is www.matri.ai. And we have a little bit on LinkedIn. I've been quiet posting there for a little while because we're working on something we'll reveal in a couple of months. It's some new like software capability, but our website has a lot.
Awesome. And also, I want to give you the last word as far as entrepreneurship or running your own business, something you can definitely relate to. You're in that entrepreneurial success story at this point. If you're talking to somebody that's getting out of the military, just got out, and they're looking, they're like you. They're like, I don't want to, what was that thing you said? I don't want to make the trains run on time. Meaning I just don't want to manage something that already exists. I want to create something new and run my own show and create my own business.
Yeah.
What kind of advice comes to mind to help somebody get into that?
Yeah. There are incredible networks that thankfully now a bunch of great people have built for a few years. So there are incredible vet business networks, entrepreneur networks. If you just Google military veteran entrepreneur, you're going to find them. And so I would say get in with them, because the only way this works is if you're around other people who are doing a similar thing, because there's so many questions. I mean, when you start your own business, you have to learn marketing and legal and HR and, you know, like your product development and business growth and strategy. It's a lot. So you have questions all the time. And then I would say, this is one thing people don't do. We stay safe. And so it's kind of the planning for the future you want. Do you want a small, medium business? Do you want a bigger business? What size do you want? What impact do you have on the world? And we sometimes forget, because we've lived so long, you know, when you're in the military for any amount of time, the rules, like everything in your world is dictated to you. And that's appropriate, because at the end of the day, it's, you know, the military serving at the pleasure of the president and our civilian leaders. But in this entrepreneurial world, you have an opportunity to create anything you want. And I think that we sometimes forget that there is no ceiling but the one we set. And your only requirement to hit that ceiling is your own obsession and your willingness to learn. And that's a different set of boxes than we're used to. So I would say don't put a ceiling on yourself lower than what's actually possible for what you can build.
Awesome. Well, hey, Ann, thanks for sharing your veteran entrepreneurship success story. I look forward to seeing your future success down the road.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you bet. These two veterans are Oscar Mike. Thank you for listening to Veteran on the Move, your pathfinder to freedom. If you like the show, leave us a review on iTunes. Reviews are always greatly appreciated. So until next time, this veteran is Oscar Mike.